connections to our human past, our families, our homes, are often described, if you think about it, through an old botanical metaphor that runs deep, that of the root. I mean, think about it. We're generally fascinated by tracing our roots, by finding out who our ancestors are and where on earth, this earth, they lived. To prove the point somewhat, if you think about the genealogical websites like Ancestry.com or, of course, SBS's Who Do You Think You Are, which I happen to absolutely adore, and to be uprooted suggests a painful experience. So perhaps there's a sense of self that comes from knowing our roots. Well, Christy Wampol has been thinking about why roots matter at a time when we're all so global, we're dispersed, yet more connected in theory. She's written a book that caught our attention. It's called Rootedness, The Ramifications of a Metaphor, deliberately designed to tap the mixed meaning that's implied in all that. Welcome, Christy.
Thanks for having me.
So across cultures and time, have we always used this image or metaphor of plant roots to express some sort of connection?
Absolutely. I was focusing my research on the Western tradition, but I also found this to be a globally consistent metaphor. But we find the metaphor in Plato, we find it in Aristotle, we find it in philosophical traditions from Descartes through Sartre through Deleuze and Guattari. My book focuses mainly on Europe and specifically France and Germany, which I see as sort of the epicenters of this transformation of the root metaphor over the centuries, but particularly in the 20th century. So there is a universal character. But we find that this metaphor crops up particularly in moments when there's a kind of destabilization, particularly of something abstract such as nation or family ties, belonging to a culture, belonging to having a feeling of embeddedness within a culture, within society. So I found this metaphor to be quite consistent and applicable to a very wide range of phenomena.
Develop this France and Germany reference a little bit more, because this is pretty central to your book, and I didn't understand that.
So at the beginning of the 20th century and the late 19th century, we find in both France and Germany, particularly in places where strong feelings of nationalism or even regionalism had taken hold, that the metaphor of the root creeps into political language. It creeps into public discourse, journalistic language. People begin to literalize the metaphor of rootedness and talk about themselves as though they actually have roots that are implanted in the earth.
Yes, you do sort of say the tree, which is a development of the root, is a potent symbol in so much human history. Trees are often sacred symbols, or they can be shrines, sacred in themselves, of course, as we know, very strong in the Asian traditions. Less so the root.
Yes, the root is, I think, a perfect figure for the subconscious in a way. It's something that's there. It's something that we need in order to thrive. But it's the hidden, it's the abject, it's the sort of invisible beginning of ourselves, the primordial. One can use the metaphor of the root itself to think of this, the subconscious, because it is what is hidden, the part of the tree that is sort of neglected in a sense because it's invisible.
Well, indeed, you quote from Jung, no tree, he wrote, it is said, can grow into heaven unless its roots reach down to hell. What's he getting at or trying to get at there?
So the tree is often seen as a figure that does connect the underworld with the heavens. And I think in many ways, the human is also seen as a kind of intermediary figure that has his or her feet connected with the earth, but with his or her head reaching toward the stars, looking toward the sky and trying to reach the divine. And I found many interesting examples of the tree as having this very interesting symmetricality of the roots can be imagined as the sort of dark underground flipped version of the branches, and that the tree is a perfect symbol for not only the kind of dichotomy of human consciousness, the way that we can be good and evil simultaneously, the way that we can be infernal and divine simultaneously, but that it emphasizes the sort of divided nature of humanity, which wants to belong to nature, but constantly self-extracts and removes itself from the earth as system.
See, what I'm getting from you there, and what I got surprisingly in your book, I thought, was that I got the impression if a society started talking about roots, you say, I think, that it displays quite a lot of conservatism and a lot of anxiety about who they are, where they are. I wonder if that's completely fair.
Well, I think not necessarily. I think when we've seen this language of rootedness, it's often when the moment when a kind of stability or comfort is disturbed. So in moments of displacement, of exile, of political instability, this is the moment when the root language kind of creeps up most prominently. A good example is the book Roots by Alex Haley from 1976, I believe, about the American slave trade and the tragic consequences of the uprooting of a people and a transferal of the people into a new place against their will. So I think anytime anyone feels unstable, there is an appeal for a kind of rootedness. The opposite side, and I think this is something that's very compatible with a more nomadic kind of global thinking, is a what we might call a rootedness in rootlessness. So a comfort with instability, a comfort with changeability, a comfort with flexibility and improvisation. So this is what I was getting at, that often conservative movements, politically conservative movements, will use the root as the figure to appeal for a kind of recovery of the past. Whereas a new language has developed since, I would say, probably in the late 60s, 70s, 80s. This is the moment when it's conceivable that humans can be global creatures, that we're not actually bound to a place, and that we can find a kind of comfort in this lack of roots.
And do I take it you prefer that? You think that that is a more comfortable, you're more comfortable with that?
I do have to talk about it and think about it from a kind of autobiographical perspective, because I do belong between this sort of battle between the sedentary people and the nomads. I feel that I fit sort of more comfortably with the nomads because I'm traveling. I am sort of meeting people from around the world, and I try to always sort of expose myself to new things. But at the same time, I do have a nostalgia for the place from which I came, and I think most people do. My parents are both florists, and I think that probably had some kind of motivation in writing this book. So I grew up in a flower shop, so I was sort of surrounded by plant life. Most of it, of
robbed
course,
of their roots, of course. Yes. Let me just tell listeners, I'm talking to Christy Wampol, who's written a very challenging book about the concept of rootedness, the compelling metaphor, as she says, that we all use to describe connections to ancestors, to home, and to the earth itself. There is a dark side, or even darker than you've mentioned thus far. You describe how there has long been a suspicion of people who are, quotes, without roots.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the most obvious sort of political instrumentalization of this metaphor is against the Jews, the imagination of Jews as rootless people and thus unrighteous people. If we look at the political propaganda of the National Socialists, we find everywhere this language of the rootless Jew, the people of the air who have no kind of physical attachments to the earth. I think this language is being used, if we look in contemporary Europe, to describe people who have been affected by the Syrian refugee crisis, people, any kind of refugee situation. These people are imagined as rootless people that could potentially become sort of weeds infecting the sort of indigenous populations of Europe or of the United States. If we listen to political speeches by someone like Marine Le Pen or Donald Trump, we hear this language of the appeal to roots and a rerooting of humans, or a rerooting of people as national citizens.
Yeah, although we do say, you know, you hear the Germans talking about inviting people to put down new roots. So, I mean,
yes.
I would argue that it can be certainly taken on in a broader sense. And, I mean, you point out in your book that if you go back far enough, we can all trace our lineage back to just a few places, to the cradles of civilization. But we often don't think of those origins as our beginning, our roots. I wonder why you think that is the case.
It's very interesting. I mean, I think most people kind of have a cutoff point. Many Americans, for example, the cutoff point is perhaps when their ancestors arrived in the United States, or a particular moment that can be kind of politically serviceable, but it is easy to forget that if we do trace our roots back far enough, we all sort of come from the same place. I've also been very curious about that. I wasn't able to answer that question. I think it's a little too complex, but it is quite consistent, I think, between cultures that it is very rare to find people who think first of those sort of primordial roots before thinking of a more recent lineage.
It certainly is provocative, that. I mean, in some ways you're describing history, aren't you? Did you think about that, that the whole notion of roots is almost another way of describing a search for heritage?
It is a search for heritage, and I think there's a kind of comfort in root seeking. I thought a lot about this, not only in terms of a kind of national or genetic belonging, but the general sense of alienation that I think many people in the contemporary world feel, that's brought about by, for example, the kind of digital loneliness that comes with the kind of new social networks that seem to connect people, but often this connection is a kind of superficial connection. People don't really know much about the place they live and the place where they've grown up. You don't really know the names of all the plants in your neighborhood, perhaps, or you can't tell stories about this or that building, or, you know, maybe you don't live in the place that your parents or grandparents or great grandparents lived. So there's a kind of absence of this connectedness with community, with nature, with maybe nation. That's another way to think about it. A very interesting book that I spend a chapter talking about, a book by Simone Weil called The Need for Roots. And she had this idea that, you know, during the Second World War, the reason that Europe had lost its mind in the First World War and then again in the Second World War is that there had been these sort of toxic forces that had been corrupting Europe's roots. And so people, she has this really interesting quote about education that she said, children can learn by rote memory all of these astronomical calculations, but they never bother to actually look up at the stars. And so we've moved towards, she had a kind of fear of abstraction, that we've moved into this very abstract moment. So money, for example, doesn't have a kind of physicality anymore. It's become this sort of invisible set of
representation
symbols
of value.
Nothing concrete exists anymore, but only abstractions of those concrete things. And this cannot but produce a kind of sense of rootlessness in the world.
Well, we will ask the listeners their thought. They can send us in their views about precisely this. It's a very provocative set of thoughts. Christy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
And Christy's book is called Rootedness, The Ramifications of a Metaphor, and it's published by Footprint Books.